Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, May 15th, 2014. And first of all, last week, very interesting situation. My show got jammed, and now I've had reports in past weeks of people hearing music on top of my show, and that's both the WWCR broadcast, and this is in various parts of the country. And so last week on Friday night, I listened to my show, and many times I'll monitor the show when I'm doing it live. But Friday night, of course, is a re-airing of the show, so I picked up my radio, tuned in to the rebroadcast of the show, and something strange happened. I tuned in a little bit early so I could hear how the frequency sounded, the sound of the previous show, etc. Everything was fine. As soon as my show started, this kind of thumping noise, kind of an electronic thumping noise started, and it obviously the volume of that thumping noise turned up until you couldn't hear my voice anymore. This is on the Friday night re-airing of the show. So then I thought, oh, somebody's jamming my show. So I turned the frequency to 5 megahertz above and then 10 megahertz above my frequency. And then I did the same below. And so when I got to 5 megahertz above and below my frequency, that kind of tapered off. And when I got to 10 megahertz above and below, or I should say 0.010 megahertz. So the next available broadcast frequency up from mine. As soon as you got to that, the jamming noise went away. It faded away. So obviously there was a narrow band jamming filter. It was a narrow band filter on the jamming frequency targeting my show. And as soon as my show ended, the jamming noise went away. Isn't that something? Well, I guess I was talking about Monsanto being involved in chemtrail spraying. And so I will continue talking about that. I talked about that on an interview I did with Maria Heller a couple weeks ago, about a week and a half ago. In that show, I heard reports that show was jammed. Also, and so, of course, these shows are archived, but still the live broadcasts tend to have a little problem when a little trouble hearing them out there. So anyway, just I'd want to dwell on that, but obviously I'm hitting on the right topic. Once again, hitting the nail on the head. Monsanto, my personal determination, Monsanto is heavily involved in chemtrail spraying. This is both for geoengineering. They're experimenting with the atmosphere, and we're finding out that we're discussing this on the John Moore Show, and the aluminum that they're spraying is increasing the aluminum content in the ground by a tremendous amount. And so what's happening out in the Western fires, this was reported by a caller on John's show on Wednesday, that the fires are burning so hot that they're burning deep down into the ground, and they'll stay there burning for days afterwards. The firefighters are noticing this, that the fires are different than normal. They don't just burn the surface shrubs and trees, etc. They're burning much hotter, and of course right now they're dealing with these fires out in the San Diego area, actually closing down military bases. But the aluminum is what is making these fires tremendously hot. You may have noticed on the internet lately, a lot of fires are creating tornadoes when they burn. Now this is a phenomena that's relatively new. To see this many fires, now you can have very intense forest fires, tremendous amount of heat burning pine forests, and they don't form tornadoes. What's going on? The aluminum is burning so hot that it's ionizing the air. It ionizes an air path above the fire. That breaks down the dielectric of the atmosphere and causes a discharge of the vertical electric field. And so thusly causing a mini tornado above the fire. So this is, and why is Monsanto pouring aluminum in spraying the ground? Well, it turns out they have a patent on aluminum-resistant seeds. Well, the ground normally doesn't have enough aluminum in it to make a difference. Normal seeds will grow, so obviously they are trying to create a monopoly where only their seeds will grow. Now, these people are nuts. This has got to be stopped. I mean, this is just insanity. Obviously, I'm hitting on a sore point because they want to do this in secret before anybody finds out about it. Obviously, also, heirloom seeds would not grow. So they don't have to worry about somebody like me sending out heirloom corn seeds, because if they can spray the ground with enough aluminum, the idea is that nothing will grow except the Monsanto patented seeds. Need I say more? I also reported that in trying to track airplanes that are chemtrail spraying, they are not, the ones that I saw, were not on the commercial airline routes. They were not airplanes that were on, because you can pull up all the, it's a map that shows all the commercial airline flights and routes and exactly where each one of them is. You can pull that up on the internet anytime it's publicly available. Those chemtrail spraying that I was witnessing were not commercial flights, although I'm sure that there are commercial flights that are doing chemtrail spraying. But it appears that these are private jets, and they have fleets of these. So obviously, and it clearly has the okay of the U.S. Air Command, who is supposedly responsible for protecting our skies over this country. Obviously, it has carte blanche with them. So this is serious business. My water book deals with the control of water, and that is the same group of people. Basically, it comes back to the world bankers, the same people that are in the Ukraine, loaning money to the Ukraine and causing World War III, basically trying to get the Ukraine so locked up in debt that they, if Russia ever did take them back, they would have to take back their also. This is the way the banks operate. So, okay, enough of that. Just a quick corollary to this announcement. There's a bee study that was done by scientists in the United Kingdom, and they put the I'm going to pronounce it correctly. These are called neonicotinoids, and these are a branch of chemicals used for plants, insecticides and pesticides. And gee, isn't it amazing, when they sprayed these on beehives, the beehives died. Well, you know, these are strong chemicals, and so this is being linked. This, of course, is the basis of the Monsanto products, and also they have tested with the Monsanto Roundup, which is the patented Roundup, all of the Roundup Ready seeds and everything. That's the one of the major chemicals being sprayed on farmland these days, being linked to the demise of bees. And without bees, well, there's not going to be a lot of activity for plants. It's clear that Monsanto wants a world in which only Monsanto patented seeds and plants will grow. This is some kind of bizarre vision that they have to dominate the world of plants and kill everything else off. And if you don't have bees, then you would have to have plants that only are pollinated and genetically stabilized in a laboratory. Now, this is absolute insanity. Clearly, many countries have banned Monsanto or Monsanto products. And a number of weeks ago, I read a disclaimer that was in Monsanto seeds, and it said specifically, you cannot export Monsanto products into regions. They were warning their distributors not to distribute Monsanto products into regions where they were not permitted by law and trade agreements. And so they're very aware of this. They don't want to cross that line, and I wonder if they have other ways of dealing with those countries so that someday the people will have to go screaming to Monsanto, save us, Monsanto, we need your help. But they are very specific not to send any Monsanto products to countries or regions in which it is in which they're prohibited. But the bee populations clearly being affected by the research, but the United Kingdom, as a result of these scientific studies, says, oh, we need more study on this, but they refuse to do any type of legislation that would prevent neonicotinoids from being used for spraying plants and thusly killing off the bee population. Another story, this is found on the Mercola website, and by the way, that's a website all of you should become familiar with. Dr. Mercola is a doctor that has amazing information. This is Mercola, MERCOLA.com, and on this webpage, a listener sent this in. It says, in Illinois, a beehive a caretaker, a guy who's been beekeeping, an apiary keeper for his entire life, was studying bees and the effect of Monsanto Roundup on his colonies, and he had control groups, etc. One day he had left, and he said he never left his house, he always just stayed there. One day he left, and when they came back, the state had been sitting there, had him staked out, went in and took all of his beehives. They claimed they burned and destroyed them, but when he came to his hearing to get his bees back, all the evidence was missing, and the state claimed he had a foul brood disease in his bees, and he said he didn't have any such disease, that the problem with the half of the bees in his stock were because of the Monsanto chemical products. And he had been doing a study, and he was just about to release his information, and all of a sudden the state, now here's what you're seeing. You're seeing the state agencies complicit with Monsanto. And so it's very clear that they're getting their boys in Washington and in even down to the local level where they are influencing government agencies. And in this case, a state agency of Illinois, Department of Agriculture, going in, stealing this guy's beehives without any court approval, and then supposedly destroying them, and then when they're asked to show the evidence, they can't find it. So anyway, read this article, go to Mercola.com, and it was posted in July 5th of 2012. It says, Monsanto Roundup effects on honeybees. That's on the Mercola.com website. Go there and read that for yourself. But this is, folks, this is getting beyond bizarre. Spraying aluminum into the and doping the ground basically with high concentrations of aluminum, positioning themselves so they have the patent on aluminum resistant seed. This is getting beyond Dr. Strangelove with this Monsanto outfit. Remember, they've been outlawed in many parts of the world except the United States, very big on Monsanto. They have their clutches in here. And as the old expression goes, if it's good for the United States, it's good for the world. At any rate, enough of that. You would think that Obama gave his little speech on climate control and that we're all responsible for it. That's a way to get their clutches into everybody out here. Just like Obamacare is a way of getting their clutches into the people, into the population. Even if you didn't join, you're going to end up paying for it one way or the other because it can't sustain the 8 to 10 million people who have signed up and are paying very little for insurance and are going to use it to the max. So at any rate, on climate control with the 800-page paper that has come out, don't you think he would be interested in finding out what's going on with the chemtrail spraying and the weather manipulation that's going on? All they concentrate on is some vague study, and really the vast majority of real scientists today, not the bought and paid for government scientists, but the real scientists say that the climate has nothing to do with greenhouse effect, etc. And it's very easy to prove. You can do this in a third grade Gedanken experiment. Just imagine when the Earth turns into nighttime, Earth turns around, we go into nighttime, the temperature drops 20 degrees. The Earth gives off all that heat, whether it gained it from greenhouse or whatever you want to claim, but the majority of that heat comes from the sun, and that's variable. The variability in the sun is way more than the increase due to some type of injection of carbon monoxide, etc. So at any rate, this is all just strange activity. But okay, on to another topic. This past week, there was a big announcement that Earth's twin, Earth's sun, our sun, the star in our solar system, which we call the sun, has a twin. And I thought, well, that's interesting. That's almost a Planet X type of announcement. But it's 110 light years away. In other words, the nearest star to us is about 4 light years away. So there are many, many, many stars between us and the distance of this star at 110 light years. There are vast fleets of stars, but why would they designate this one particular star as the twin of Earth? Well, they're saying due to composition. So at any rate, I looked at the study, and it just really is full of holes. But, it's so typical of Tier 2 science, anything to grab a headline. And it's such a vague study. It's like, here's what it would be like. I'm going to compare it to something. Okay, you have a certain brand of refrigerator in your house. And, okay, so you survey all of the houses within blocks and blocks around you, and you find another house 5 or 6 blocks away that has the same refrigerator. And you go, oh, these two houses are related because they have the same refrigerator. That's about how nonsensical this study is. It's so vague, and it has such little data to go on. There's no rigorous way to put these two stars in a historical pattern, and like I say, there are vast numbers of stars around Earth much closer to Earth. Why aren't they related to Earth? Is it just due to one factor that they're looking at? So, and the ultimate recourse is that nobody was there when these stars were created, so they really can't say what the history of these stars were. Also, in that vein, it would be like finding two ethnically similar people on the street and saying, oh, you are related. It's like, wow, is that a amazing statement? Somewhere in history, maybe there was a common ancestry if you went back far enough, but that doesn't mean they have anything else in common, let alone a similar origin. With all the other properties of stars and the fact that stars evolve once they're born, they change. This idea that a star is born and is immutable, it has no change at all during the rest of its lifetime, is just absurd. It's not true. There's no, the stars change, and they go through vast changes sometimes. So to see two stars right now in this point in time when they seem to have some similar properties, it is not at all indicative that these stars were somehow twins at birth. Now, here's a very interesting topic. In Wyoming, they have been the first state to ban or vote against the new federal standard K-12 science standards proposed by a national educational group. And they've done this mainly because of global warming. In the standardized science, they want to tell you that global warming is reality. But now, Wyoming is not rejecting this because of any kind of sound scientific analysis. They're doing it because they're a coal state and they don't want to offend the coal industry. I mean, I just find this amazing, the way politics work today. Now, what I find rather comical about this issue in Wyoming regarding scientific standards, the rejection of national so-called standard science, well, the scientific community says, well, these are peer-reviewed. In other words, they're voted on into popularity by the people that basically make their living off of promoting these concepts. This peer review cycle where they rely on this concept of peer review. By the way, if you want to see my comments regarding peer review, I have a peer review subpage. Just scroll down next to the Thought of the Day subpage link off my main homepage. You will also find a link for peer review. And I haven't put any comments there lately because it's something that all of my beliefs, I think, are already there, but they're very valid. And I start out by saying peer review is like an old, an old man driving in the left lane. That peer review is like an old man driving down the left lane of a crowded, busy freeway and going slow. And the guy doesn't have any problem. There's plenty of space in front of him. He just can't figure out why everybody's honking and trying to get around him. That's peer review in a nutshell. It's a way for scientists to maintain a monopoly, sit in their ivory tower, and do nothing. That is what peer review is all about. Real scientific inquiry, the vast, vast majority, you have to understand, of real scientific progress today has no scientific peer review because it is valuable in its own right. And the people in the industry that it's associated with, whatever that is, recognize the value of scientific advancements. And a lot of this is done in secret because if you try and get a patent, then your information becomes public. So why would you go to the patent route? Patents are really a once upon a time they may have worked. The patent system is a vast failure because if you go to get a patent, it's just going to be stepped on by some other group. And if they have enough money, all they got to do is keep you into the court merry-go-round for 20 years as they steal and make profit off your idea. So anybody in their right mind would not go get a patent. If you were trying to form a company based on an innovative idea, you would tell your financiers, a lot of the times they would tell you, we need a patent on this. Well, then you tell the financiers, okay, well, you put the money down for the attorneys, for the patent defense, for the writing of the patent, and all of the manipulation and legal maneuvering hoops that you're going to have to jump through in the future. This is only a way for them to take your idea, because when the legal expenses become too great, you would cave and they would take your idea. And at that point, that's just a way of robbing scientists. It's just another way of robbing scientists of their ideas. So that's my opinion of peer review. The real advancements in science, mathematics, etc., never go through peer review. because they are what they are. For example, my prime number work, some people criticized because I didn't go to publish it. Well, it turns out that the top people in any peer review system avoid change because they supposedly are the top people in that field. When my prime number work hit the streets, the guys who were actually, that was submitted for publication, the guys who reviewed it were the guys who had the biggest chunk of to lose. Terry Tao and Ben Green had just won the field prize for proving, supposedly, that prime numbers are random. My work conclusively showed that prime numbers not only have patterns, but they are a complete independent number system. Not to mention that you can calculate them directly and how they are calculated in groups. So the entire work that I did, I finally published it for the public, and it's understandable by people that are really rudimentary in mathematics. So the whole idea of peer review is just a way for people in that field to monopolize the field. And so a completely incorrect result of two top mathematicians saying that prime numbers are random and not with no order, winning a prize for that, the field prize should be returned because they're totally incorrect. They came up with a completely incorrect result. But in peer review, that doesn't happen. Once something is peer reviewed and it's placed in a journal, it's there for good. The same situation exists in space science and astronomy. They're still vying with theories that were consecrated through peer review back in the 1950s. Whoa, Nelly. At any rate, peer review is a complete disaster. The way materials should be published is simply through open publication. And then you put your name on the material, and it's worth the, then history has the ability to claim and criticize if they want, and let the criticism be open. With peer review, the criticisms are anonymous. So you're getting an anonymous review from a guy who has a vested interest in maintaining his monopoly. Whoa, not a good system. Bound to be abused. Just a quick note before going on to the main science topic. Dutch now require the aliens trying to become Dutch citizens, they have to be fluent in Dutch. They have to speak the language fluently, not just a little bit, but fluently to become a citizen. Otherwise, they don't get in. In fact, they have to leave. The United States right now is bending towards the language of Spanish, which in a sense is okay. But this whole issue of people coming to a country and not, they want to be here for the benefits, but they don't want to be here for the becoming part of what already exists here. You have to wonder what the real intention is of a person who comes to a country and doesn't assimilate into the country. Just a quick note on Russia. This is huge. It's not being announced in the Western press. The Republic Radio has a very good posting, and then there's other people who are posting this on their webpage. But just to refer you, Russia is planning on leaving the petrodollar. They're going to stop using the dollar as the medium of exchange of oil. They are the largest exporter of oil and the second largest in the world, and I believe the largest exporter of natural gas in the world. Europe depends heavily on them, so the United States has been the big bully economically on the block for a long time, for a very, very long time. But you can't be the bully if you're not the strongest guy in the block anymore. And you're starting to go around and cause little problems in other places. So the U.S. being basically the enforcer of the World Bank through its dollar, isn't flying in Russia. And so the other thing, this is interesting, regarding the space station, the United States has no ability to get to or get people to or from the space station. They have a company that has a supply technology to get supplies to the space station, but not people. But basically, the Russians have told the Americans, go and find your own way up there. One leading Russian official said, if you want to get to the space station, use a trampoline. That's what the Russians told the U.S. about getting to the space station, because the U.S. has no ability to get into space at all, our illustrious space program. China is ready to end U.S. dominance in the world of economics, and they're about to create an international trade monetary system. Now, you can see where all this is coming from and going to. The plan, and this has been the World Bank plan all along, was to break the U.S. dollar and replace it. So this is all part of the big plan. And, of course, Putin has to play into this to save his country. So you see how they pit country against country to maneuver to get what they want, the destruction of the United States. And the United States has basically been destroyed for a long time economically. The housing crisis was planned. And mind you that the vast majority of housing sales that are coming in our future are going to come from foreign investment, people buying houses here as a basically a third world resort, a place to come to and shop for products that are basically made in other parts of the world. But the United States, the citizens are going to be toilet cleaners and maids and butlers. That's the future of the American public. And this is topped off by the fact that during the days of the so-called infinite war on terrorism, etc., the U.S. has piled up insurmountable quantities of debt. So it's just, you know, the writing is on the wall. The United States is failing financially. The other thing they're doing is this July 1st ruling. They are setting out to basically encompass all Americans, no matter where they are in the globe, and squeeze them to death financially. Basically, that's what the law July 1st is doing. So Americans have two possibilities, either completely cut ties financially with the United States, but there again, the United States is going to be the big loser on this. Like I say, you can only be the big bully on the block if you're big and able to back up your bully. But if you're not, then the big bully is going to get tromped on, and that's what's going on now. The United States, and you got little Obama, who's no match for Putin, no match for anybody else in the world. Okay, on to the main science topic. The main science topic tonight, and I should have announced it at the beginning of the show, is solar fusion and climate change. Now, it's by studying the real activity on the sun, we can understand what really is happening with climate change on Earth. Understanding that the sun is variable, that it's not constant, is essential to understanding that you, with your driving your SUV up and down the street, is not causing climate change. Now, loading that onto the public is essential for control. So it's essential for the scientific, bought and paid for community that works on government grants, etc., to kowtow to that that scenario, the climate, the man-made climate scenario. And like I say, it's just humorous that Wyoming is the first state to vote to not teach that as a standard in their science in K-12, in grade school through high school, kindergarten, because it's a coal state. The vast majority of their income as a state comes from coal taxation revenue. It's not because of some high-level scientific thinking on the part of the Wyomingans. It's because of money. It's because the coal industry contributes vast amounts of dollars into the Wyoming state economy. So they're like, well, we don't really want to say anything. And so you see, everybody has a financial interest in what they're saying. That's why, for example, I don't have sponsors. I don't have advertisement on my show because, I'm here to tell you scientific information the way I see it. And people who criticize me, hey, there's the button on your radio or on your computer. You don't have to listen. So I think it's humorous that people criticize me. Well, turn the radio off. But those are people that don't want you to hear what I'm saying. That's the difference, you understand. If those people are out there listening to my show and then out on the internet criticizing me, they got an axe to grind because I'm saying something that I'm paying for. You're sitting there listening for free. They don't want you to listen to what I'm saying. That's all. That's the answer in a nutshell. Okay, back to the sun. The sun is variable. The standard model for the sun says that the core of the sun, that's where the fusion is. That's where the fusion engine that heats the sun is deep in the core. And they say that a star forms when dust and gases collapse and form, this is under gravitation, they collapse, and the huge pressure down in the center of that star is sufficient to kick off the fusion reaction. Now, there's some problems here. If you can kick off a fusion reaction, that pressure is constant throughout this entire core of the sun. Why doesn't this baby just blow up in one big explosion? You know, that's a question that I don't think anybody really answers conclusively. The other issue is that there's not enough matter in the center of the sun to last at the energy output of the sun. There's not enough matter there to last for 4.5 billion years, the so-called stated age of the sun. So from a number of basic, just onion skin analysis, this core fusion model of the sun doesn't add up. It doesn't explain how the solar wind works. How does all of a sudden a series of charged particles come flaring off the surface of the sun? It doesn't talk about solar. It doesn't explain solar flaring or CMEs or any other type of solar surface activity, which was all discovered long after the core fusion model was basically peer-reviewed and placed into eternal sanctity in the religion of modern science. The entire concept that the core of the sun is where the heat comes from, it was negated. The Russians, at my behest back in the mid-90s, did a very simple experiment. This is explained in my weather book, the Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun-Earth Weather, explains that the Russians did a very simple experiment. They took an X-ray detector that could detect X-rays across the spectrum of X-rays, and I believe it went into the ultraviolet. But you can pick out a narrow band in the X-ray spectrum and analyze it, or you can do a wider band X-ray analysis. But here's what happens. You scan your X-ray detector across the narrow band from the left side of the sun to the right side of the sun, or from the right to the left, that doesn't matter. Okay, so what happens when you are just starting to detect X-rays at the left surface of the sun? You're seeing X-rays that are coming from that portion of the solar engine or the solar heat profile. Okay? Now you move to the right just a little bit with your detector, which is like a small, has a small footprint. a small focus point, so to speak. Okay, now you monitor the x-rays from that particular region. And then you move it a little bit more, and now you measure the x-rays from that region, and you continue going to the right, basically scanning across the surface of the sun. Now, this is something that's very easy to do and could be done with basic laboratory equipment. Certainly, it could be done with NASA or the standard scientific community. And to prove this, the third-party independent verification is what science is all about. And so here is what the results, how the results came out. As you come in from the edge of the sun, that's where the hottest x-rays are coming from. As you start to move in, now what do you do? You, at the second reading, where you're a little bit closer to the center of the sun, now you know what the x-ray profile at the surface of the sun is like, so you subtract that off. Now you're left with the x-rays that are just coming from that deeper section, that deeper layer in the sun. Okay, now move your detector across, and you detect the x-rays coming off of that region of the sun. And now you subtract off the first and the second readings, because those represent the x-rays that are coming from the outer layers of the sun. Okay, then you move to the right a little more, and you continue this process where now you subtract off the first, second, and third layer readings, x-rays, and now you're measuring just the x-rays that are coming deeper in the atmosphere of the sun, and you continue doing this. And what ends up is that the surface of the sun is hotter than when you go down deeper into the sun. The deeper you go into the solar atmosphere, the cooler it gets. Opposite, the exact 180 degrees opposite of what you would calculate and expect if the core fusion model were correct. Now you get into a certain point, and now all of a sudden the x-ray profile is constant all the way across. And so no matter how much you subtract off from the previous reading, you're getting the exact same reading. And all of a sudden you hit a certain point on the other side of the sun and you start to reverse back out of this process. And the atmosphere starts getting hotter and hotter and hotter, eliminating those colder x-rays, the lower energy or colder x-rays, as you would call them. So at any rate, the end result is that the core of the sun is like a large planetary core, cooler than the outer atmosphere. So the fusion, absolutely, without question, is up in the upper atmosphere of the sun, not in the core. Now you can measure this. A third grader with the right equipment could measure this. So this is something that is being blocked from standard science. A simple experiment, very easy to do, very easy to replicate, being blocked. Why? Because if it were known that the energy from the sun was from the surface of the sun, and we see the with the satellites, the SOHO satellites, the various other satellites that are looking at the sun, the stereo A and B satellites, etc., and all of the 50 ground-based stations that are looking at the sun, you would easily be able to determine that the sun's energy output is changing. About back in the early 2000s, NASA was given a project to do, and that was to measure the solar output and try and determine, and the whole point was for global climate change to see if there was some long-term trend, something that might happen. And they expected that over 100 years or 1,000 years, there would be absolutely no change at all. This, of course, is based on the core fusion model of the sun. What they found out was, and of course, their detectors were designed incorrectly, of course, as very typical of NASA satellites. The design of the satellite is designed for the result that they're expecting. They didn't design for something that was unexpected, in other words, short-term change. And so what they discovered was on a localized regions of the sun, and also in time localized, the sun's energy output was changing radically, and as fast as their detectors could detect the change, the changes were occurring. In other words, the surface of the sun was emitting energy that was wildly variable, far more than anybody ever even imagined. So rather than publish their results, they shut down the project and never announced the results. Well, obviously, there's some manipulation and control there. You don't want to publish results that conflict with major assumptions in the scientific industry. Moreover, this would blow completely this entire idea of global climate change that's caused by you driving your SUVs up and down the street. Now, oddly enough, let's go back to the Wyoming study, or the Wyoming rejecting the climate change being taught in schools in Wyoming. The climate change study that they're trying to pawn off on the public in public schools is exonerated by Exxon and Mobil, the two biggest oil companies on the planet. Well, that's very interesting, but you have to understand the global climate changeology is very much a part of their projected future also. Because instead of talking about the real issue that we're burning up the oxygen on Earth at a tremendous rate, we have about half the amount of oxygen on Earth now as we did 100 years ago. Isn't that incredible? And we're burning oxygen and it's not coming back. The concept that the tropical forests of the Amazon somehow provide us with all of our oxygen is absurd. Basically, they cannot keep up with the amount of automobile production of carbon dioxide. Yet, the whole issue of climate change can be put off, and politically, it can be used as a political football without ever coming to any realization that we can't keep burning oil the way we're burning it. We can't keep burning natural gas, but oil is the biggie, and coal. If you take the world energy consumption and look at the percentage of nuclear, coal, and oil, it's about 33% for each, about one-third, one-third, one-third. That's for nuclear, oil, and coal. That's the division of energy in the world. And other things like natural gas has a little teeny smidgen, and alternative energies like solar and wind, etc., have an extremely small portion. You can see that Wyoming is going to do nothing about curbing CO emissions or CO2 emissions because their big cash cow is the coal industry. Nobody's going to rock their little financial boat there to save the planet. Everybody's, you know, rah-rah, let's save the planet, but when it comes down to actually doing something, money rules the day. I did quite a few studies a number of years ago, and I called it the myth of alternative energy. The idea that putting windmills out there, these little three-blade, 1.5 megawatt wind generators that dot the farmlands of Kansas and central United States, or other places like in the California, etc., that these are useless white elephants. They're not going to make any difference at all in the production of energy for the world. You can make a very simple calculation. Okay, take a 1.5 megawatt wind generator, determine its real energy output is about 10%. So you're dealing with, 150,000 watt generator. Basically, very little energy coming out of these systems. And that's when it's running. That's on average. So the real answer is that if you were to try and define or try to build enough wind power systems based on that basic system, you would have to build 77 million of them to try and reach the energy consumption of the world. And of course, it would take vast amounts of energy just to build those 77 million towers. They have trouble putting installations of 1,000 or 2,000. That's a big number in the wind industry, let alone 77 million. So obviously wind, the way it's designed and structured today, is a good idea for the energy industry because it will never, ever in a zillion years be comparable to the energy needs. So that keeps oil and coal and nuclear well instilled in the energy future. So the same with this whole concept of global warming. Politicians can kick it around, use it to control water, use it to, like all of the storms that we've been seeing and the strange weather over the past month through the United States. This has all been manipulated. The snow in Kansas, followed by 4 days of 103 degree weather. This is not your normal weather pattern for spring, folks. These are manipulated storm and climate systems. And that was right on the heels of Obama giving his little speech. Isn't that interesting? Isn't it wonderful how they can time all of this to influence the public thought? But now you can go back, and the concept that I proposed back in the late 1970s, that the sun's fusion is up at the surface, even today is not a very popular idea, and I'm probably not going to get a lot of press time. That's why I have my own radio show, because this is a way that you can listen, learn this information, and how does it work? How does the fusion of the sun work up at the surface? Well, first of all, there's not enough solar fusion fuel, the hydrogen, the helium, the deuterium. There's not enough of it there to last for 4.5 billion years. So the sun has to have a constant influx of these burning materials, the fusion material, and that is there because the sun acts as a large comet in the galactic influence, and that's another story, but it does basically the same thing as a comet in the region of the sun. The sun is discharging the galactic capacitor, and that causes an influx of the primary constituent in the universe, which is hydrogen. So that's the fuel engine which keeps our sun going. How does solar fusion work? Well, it's very simple because it's also working in the planet Jupiter and in the planet Saturn. There are fusion fires, basically electrical fires caused by lightning bolts in the very turbulent, tumultuous solar atmosphere. It is caused by something known as the pinch effect. In fact, the ability to create fusion has been known about for a long time, except you will never find them using this in real fusion research. Once again, the whole point of fusion research is not to locate a source of fusion, which would solve our world problems very nicely in terms of energy. The goal, it's like cancer research. The goal is never to find a solution. So the only things that get funded are the projects that are guaranteed not to work. But how does fusion occur on the sun? Very simply, as the lightning bolts, which are much, much bigger than lightning bolts on Earth, as they twist and bend, it's in those magnetic, very strong magnetic fields in the bends and twists, as the electric currents pull themselves together by something known as the pinch effect, self-induced magnetic field pulls those currents together, and the pressure is sufficient to kick off the fusion reaction up in the atmosphere, not in the core. Remember that the core of the sun is a solid planetary type of core. So you have the regeneration of fuel data, the hydrogen fuel that's required for ongoing burning. And now this is variable. So what is our climate really dependent on? It's dependent on the sun on a minute-to-minute basis, and the solar output is varying considerably. It's just that we have been in a period for a number of thousands of years with a relatively stable situation with the sun. What can change that? One thing that can change it is a large comet coming into the solar system. We've had many events of serious cold on this planet, and I just saw an article this past week where scientists are arguing. It's some kind of big controversy in the world of astronomy and space science that one group says, oh, something came in and it exploded above the atmosphere and caused winter and caused a cooling back during the time when the mastodons went extinct. And they're putting this about 12,000 years ago. It was actually about 4,500 years ago when the mastodons went extinct on Earth. And it was caused by, we know what it was. It was, Velikovsky was right. It was the planet Venus coming through the solar system that caused that event. But standard science is quibbling over whether it was a small comet or asteroid that exploded above the Earth, or if it was due to the Earth simply jumping up and doing this all by itself. And that's now the winning proposal, that somehow Earth just did it all by itself. But they will never touch the card that the sun is variable. See, they rely on these standard stories. And so this so-called controversy can rage in science, and they're going back and forth. That's the peer-reviewed standard scientific garbage that's pawned off on the public. Neither story is correct, but they'll sit there and argue for the next 10 years, throwing data back and forth, and that will be considered controversial arguments up in the qualified, the bona fide, the sanctioned scientific community. And as long as they keep up there arguing about those things that have absolutely no bearing on reality, they'll get their paycheck. What a good deal for them. But the issue of climate change is basically we are strapped to the sun. Our climate is indelibly strapped to the sun. And back to the story, as we move into nighttime, the Earth spins around, we drop 20 degrees in temperature, and we depend on that sun to heat us back up the next day. And we are basically eliminating all of the heat, no matter where that heat came from during the day, we're eliminating that during the nighttime. So, you know, the sun is the main source of our energy, both electrical and the light, the visible light that gets down into the surface of the Earth, that's the main source of climate. A long-term climate stabilization of the Earth is dependent on that and nothing else. Remember to go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, just seven letters, the short URL, and check out my personalized water filters. That's a new product, 1 and 2 liter size, with clamp tops. This is really a wonderful new product. I'm sure I'll be selling a lot of these. Once again, the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.